Good morning. This is Lydia Aranda, and I'm your host for Rainmakers. It's Monday, December 8th. So excited to be here once again, welcoming in a wonderful week, starting off with some good energy. It is crisp and cold outside, Mr. Matt Neely.
It is.
But it's wonderful. We get to put on sweaters, and, you know, they
you
might
to,
be cotton.
Wear
they might be cotton sweaters,
for
but
two
still.
Weeks. You can wear things for 2 weeks that you can't wear any other time of the year.
That's right. And we are now into the second Monday of December, and of course, if it's Monday, it's Rainmakers here on The Morning Voice.
Of course.
And making it rain, telling those stories about the people and initiatives who are helping Southern Arizona thrive. And there's so many of those good stories going on. This past weekend was filled with many events and festivals. People are getting into the holiday spirit. They're having their year-end celebrations. They're reminding people that they can still give. It's not too late if you're trying to do some charitable giving and get that in before the tax year ends. And of course, so much need out there in so many ways we all can make a difference. As you know, often on Mondays, we talk about what is the local day or national day of whatever. And Matt, I've got some exciting ones for
you. All right.
Here we go. December 8th, National Crossword Solvers Day. Do you like crossword puzzles?
I love them.
I do too.
Yeah.
They're so much fun. I have to say, I've tried to get into the Sudoku over these years. I've not been so good at that, but some other people are into that. That's different.
That's fun too.
You know, it's kind of a different number, sort of that combined thing. But I love word Scrabble's one of my favorite games, and of course, crossword solving those. My brother thrives on his reputation of being able to do crosswords in pen. He won't do pencil.
So I'm one of those, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
Like you show
good
off.
Good for him. Yeah, that's a flex.
Yeah, exactly. It's also December 8th is National Brownie Day, and I got to tell you, that's a pretty yummy one. I love brownies.
The crossword and a brownie. I think we're all
that's
one across a three-letter word for affirmative. Yes. So yeah, I'm there.
That's right. And one more to talk about.
Okay.
Today is Pretend to Be a Time Traveler Day.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if that's for people who want to go forward, but,
okay.
You know, maybe it's people who want to go back and do it differently or do it again. Mm. But I thought that was a really interesting one. I'm going to have to look a little bit deeper into how that started and who and how come. But I'm glad that we are in the present because lots of great things going on right here. And this morning, we have a wonderful show lined up. Kicking us off bright and early this morning is my very good friend and a wonderful community leader, Melissa Dye. Melissa, bienvenida.
Oh, muchas gracias.
So nice to have you here this morning in studio here at KVOI. And we are
finally.
Going. Yes, I know we've been trying to do this for a while. Monday mornings are tough for people, you know. Some people love the opportunity to clear their schedule, even though it's early, and just come in and kick off the day. But people like you and so many others who have so much on their plate, you know, Mondays are tough times. They're usually full of staff meetings and catching up. And in your case, you do a lot of traveling all around the state for the day job that you hold, but also for those extracurricular community initiatives that you have been so much of a part of or have founded, like in the case of what we're going to talk about today. Our listeners and viewers, I want you to know that Melissa is the founder of Education Unidos, which is a scholarship program focused on the Douglas area of our state. So Douglas, Arizona, and kind of surrounding areas. This is a scholarship that came about many years ago. Well, I'm going to say a handful of years ago, about 6 years. Is that about right?
Oh, longer than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Correct me.
Speaking of time travel.
Yes.
We're going to travel back in time this morning.
That's right. We're going to reflect a little bit about how this came about. As I recall, my understanding for all the years that I've known you and how you've had me involved a little bit as a supporter. Certainly, I stand there and cheerlead all the time and get really excited and tell more people about this. And I thought it'd be wonderful if we let our listeners and viewers know more about this opportunity for students that they may know who might want to apply for this scholarship, but also alumni. Maybe we can do shout out to some of your alumni who have been recipients over the years of this scholarship, and maybe they can get involved in giving back, being a mentor, and all kinds of good stuff that we'll talk about this morning.
Yes, perfect.
Super. Let's start with a little bit of a softball and talk about your growing up. You hail from southern Arizona, southeastern Arizona, mm-hmm. but not just Douglas, mm-hmm. but also you are a binationally raised Arizona and southern mm-hmm. Arizona, because you grew up also on the Agua Prieta side. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. That's a hardball. Yeah, I mean,
it's a deep ball.
It's
for
a
sure.
deep ball for sure. Yeah.
Hija de la frontera.
Thank you. You remember?
I do.
You remember? Yeah. That's. I'm so proud to always introduce myself as that daughter of the border, hija mm-hmm. de la frontera. You know, and it's interesting because for those of you out there that are even remotely familiar to growing up on the border, have read stories. You know, we have great authors out there of books,
yes,
you know, of growing up on the border. You know, just being in the thick of that, just, you know, you don't really understand it growing up. It is very confusing, you know, and people often talk about, and I think it was Gloria Saldúa that said, you know, ni de aquí ni de allá, you know, or it, that was a really interesting upbringing. But, you know, leaving the area for school, for university, for, you know, other opportunities, I realized, wow, what a rich, what an empowering and, you know, powerful way to grow up between two countries, you know, back and forth. And yeah, interesting stories for sure. It wasn't as complicated crossing the border.
No,
you know, 30
so much easier
years
back
ago,
then.
35 years ago, it wasn't. But, you know, still, I think, you know, just the dynamic of being able to grow up in, you know, a house in Douglas, Arizona, and then my grandma's house on the Agua Prieta side. It was just so much fun.
Easily come back and forth.
Easily come back and forth. And, you know, if we have time, I'll definitely share a story about that. And when I was teaching at Cochise College, you know, something came up along those lines that just blew my mind. But yeah, I mean, growing up on the border, definitely, you know, and reflecting back on it. And honestly, I decided to go back to Douglas and raise my daughters there. That's how important I thought it was that I grew up there. You know, I'm like, oh, I want my daughters to experience the same thing, you know, because it really
because
is.
Because you had moved by that time. You were living elsewhere and you were in a bigger city and doing things. But you made that conscious choice to go back to Douglas.
Yes.
And, you know, what's always interesting to me about the Douglas area, too, is where people get a lot of the state of New Mexico. So there's lots of borders going on there, not just the international border, but the state to state. And even though our states are very similar in many ways, they are a different state, different rules, different approaches. And so having sort of that tri-border experience is probably really interesting, being in a little bit rural, a little bit international, a little bit bi-state, you know, lots of things going on there.
A little bit of everything, for sure. Yeah, but very enriching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lots of different cultures going on and a lot of history in Douglas.
Yes.
Many families that have been there for many generations owning land or running farms or some being in mining and traveling away for some of those kinds of experiences and coming back. So can you believe it? We are, I know that in our next segment, we're going to be digging a little bit deeper into the history and all that, but I want to let our listeners know just a little bit. So your career has been sometimes formally in education. You talked about teaching at Cochise College, which is the community college over in Cochise County. But also I'm aware of your background with the U of A. You are very prominent in UA South. And that's what has a little bit of history of this scholarship that came about. But other areas, you've been in health, you've been in healthcare and supportive services. What other industries have you had in your wonderful career?
Hospitality.
Yes.
Hospitality.
I was going to say, I know that you went over to Nevada to Las Vegas.
Yeah, that was fun. Definitely a great experience to be in hospitality. And quite honestly, I just feel like that is the essence of who I am, hospitality. So it doesn't matter what industry I work in. That is my delivery every single time. You know, like, how do I treat? So whatever industry I'm in, if I am managing a clinic, you know what? My patients are my customers.
That's right.
If I am working at the University of Arizona, my students are my customers. And then as well as the internal customers, right? And everybody that works alongside us and, you know, with us, they're also customers. So for me, hospitality is just sort of like in my veins and it's ingrained in everything I do.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I have no doubt that some of those things also helped influence your paying attention to those customers or the end user need. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'm going to take a wild guess. I don't think I'm too far off here, that as you saw students, especially students in our southeastern corner of our state, needing probably not having as many scholarship options, probably not having as many mentorship and other kinds of apprenticeship or other kinds of options where they could learn and have access to people as well as resources. So I'll ask the question, is that kind of what informed you a little bit that made you want to create this opportunity of a scholarship called Education Unidos?
Yeah, you're right on about that for sure, Lydia. And It was, but it was interesting because I couldn't really pinpoint it. I knew there was a need. I grew up in that area, my friends. So I knew there was a need and now I'm positioned. I felt, oh, how can I empower? How can I, you know, get folks to pay attention to there are opportunities here in Douglas. And I always used to talk about how, you know, Cochise College, shout out to Cochise College being the number one college in community college in the nation. You know, it's amazing to be able to have that. And we have it in Douglas. And then you have the University of Arizona also back, you know, back in the day that had a strong presence in Douglas. So I always used to say, wow, we have two of the best higher education institutions in our little town of Douglas. How do we leverage that? How do we make sure that folks are taking advantage of those resources?
Well, we're going to pause right there on that thought. So listeners and viewers, stay tuned. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We've got Melissa Dye, from founder of Education Unidos, in our studios this morning, and we'll be right back after this quick break. And we are back on this Monday, December 8th. We are rainmakers because this is the Monday show of The Morning Voice here live at KVOI 1030 The Voice. And I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. And in studio with me for this first hour is Melissa Dye. Melissa is the founder of Education Unidos, which is a scholarship, but it's more than just a scholarship program. Education Unidos furthers the mission, creating a culture of education in Douglas, Arizona, and has collaborated over the years with University South Foundation, the Mexican Consulate, and others to create Education Unidos Scholarship Fund. Melissa, this is such an important issue. We were speaking before the break and even during the commercial break a little bit about when needs become apparent. Sometimes they're still not real crystal clear. Often there's an inkling, there's a feeling, there's a notion, there's an awareness. And it takes a little bit to kind of make that finite and say, here's what I think we need to do. Tell us about how you went through that process before you founded Education Unidos.
It's a fun one for sure. So this, we're going back in time.
Yes.
That time machine
that time
we were talking about.
Yes.
But 2012 is when I started working at the U of A in that Douglas area. And I remember Ben Packer, our director for student services at that time, you know, he asked me to put together a strategic plan for the year. And so that was a lot of fun to be able to do that, come in and manage, you know, the whole U of A scenario there for Douglas. And so when I turned in my strategic plan to him, he said, oh, I'm going to add one more thing. I'm going to need more students from Douglas to apply for scholarships because, you know, we never get anybody from Douglas to apply for scholarships. We want to make sure. Yeah, right. So I said, oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely. I'll get on that mission, right? So we did. When I started at the campus there, I had 12 students that I inherited. We definitely grew a lot after that. But so those, you know, a couple of those students applied for scholarships. the scholarship recipient list was published, and not one student was selected. And
not one from the Douglas applicants.
Okay. Yeah, not one. So I called the scholarship office. You know, hi. You know, I'm working on this. It's one of my, you know, I want to make sure this has happened. Mm-hmm. Can we make sure that students are applying get selected? But you know, what do I have to do, right? Yeah. How do I make sure that this happens? So they said, oh, you know, it's the quality of the essay. So being a bilingual growing up on the border, I thought, oh, maybe English as a second language is one of the barriers, maybe the grammar, you know. Mm-hmm. So I made it a mission, rolled up my sleeves, put together some scholarship writing workshops, and made sure that the next cohort of students applied, right, for scholarships. So a couple of them did. Scholarship essay was published again. And guess what?
Still none.
None. Wow. None was selected. So now.
So you're like, now this is this is something else to look into.
I told my student assistant at that time, clear my afternoon. I'm driving to the scholarship office. So I did. And so we talked about it. And so what they told me was I had misinterpreted. It wasn't because of grammar or language. It was they were not expressing the need on the scholarship essays. So I thought it was interesting, you know, when they told me that I was
sort of the only topic of the essay is how will this help you? Tell us more about you. Why do you need a scholarship?
Exactly. Uh-huh. But, you know, I realized at that point that talking about pinpointing an issue that we need to deal with, I think not just back then, but still today, is we have a cultural competency issue on our hands here, because growing up Mexican, growing up on the border, you know, all of that, you know, we can be starving.
Growing up rural.
I mean, we could be starving and we'll never express a need. It's sort of like it's a cultural thing.
Right.
You just don't do it. Estamos bien.
Yeah.
Everything's okay.
We're fine. We'll work harder. We'll be fine.
We'll be fine. Yeah. And so I marched over to the University South Foundation office and I said, what do I have to do to start a scholarship in Douglas? So just raise money and, you know, you got it. And I said, okay, will you guys match this whatever I raised dollar for dollar? I'm like, well, let's take it to the board. They did. They took it to the board and they approved 50 cents for every dollar I raised.
That's good for brand new. That's
brand
pretty
new.
Good. Usually they like to give
exactly
a little bit at a time and then over time. So is it something that is matched dollar for dollar these days?
No, not yet.
Is it still 50%?
And it's grown even more than that. The strategy behind it now has become, you know, such an amazing part of the University South Foundation and the work that they do. They are 1,000% supporters of the scholarship.
Wonderful.
They're very proud of it and it because it continues, right? So the other, you know, little piece of that puzzle was the Mexican Council. At that time, I was working on the Latin Film Festival, partnering with them on some fun Latin film.
A lot of great stuff goes on in Cochise County with film.
Yes, they really do. Mm-hmm. Yes. So at that time, we were working on that. And the consul at that time said to me, hey, I have something that you might be interested. And that's where IMEVECAS came into the picture, which is a scholarship that is designated.
Yes.
Mexican government funds go to Mexican and Mexican heritage students in the U.S. who are pursuing a higher education degree. Yeah.
So IMEVECAS, IME standing for Instituto de Mexicanos en el Exterior.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the Institution for Mexicans Abroad.
Yes.
Meaning it's in this case in the U.S. in Arizona, and becas meaning scholarships. So that fund, what an exciting way to link it in. So
it was
there you
a
go.
Seed. It was a seed fund.
Yes.
And we got $8,000 that first year. So I called the foundation. I said, hey, guess what? I have $8,000. So I need $4,000.
Yeah, I need $4,000 from you. Yeah. There you go.
So yeah, we gave $12,000 to very deserving students, five deserving students that first semester. One of them a DACA student who, you know, graduated and is now a teacher and, you know, just doing amazing. So it was just such a wonderful way to, I guess, sort of jumpstart not just the strategic plan, but, you know, just the
jumpstart
culture.
Traction.
Yeah, there you go.
Build some traction.
Build traction, exactly, for what became an amazing and still goes really, really strong scholarship.
Oh, it is! It is very much going strong, and I know in the past 5 years or so, being able to see myself firsthand, maybe even years before that, because I think dating back to 2018, 2019, some of the celebrations, being able to be down there for the mm-hmm. celebrations, the recognition, the fundraising, and then sitting with you as you have continued to bring other leaders together, mm-hmm. Mayors and county level folk, other community or nonprofit leaders, retirees, present and past teachers, all kinds of folks I've seen you get together with and bring even some of the scholars themselves to meet with the leaders that are helping raise these funds and keep it going.
Absolutely.
I think it's so exciting. And like I said, over the years, you've built up some alumni mm-hmm. who now are able to participate. And whether it's just a few dollars or a whole lot of dollars, you know, every little bit helps.
Every little bit helps. And it is encouraging, of course, to see the alumni who are now leaders, amazing teachers, city leaders, you know, just being able to say, hey, I'd like to come and help out or give back to the scholarship that gave me so much.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we are getting ready to take our next break. We're at the bottom of the hour. You've been listening to Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and we've got in studio Melissa Dye, founder of Education Unidos. So stick with us. We'll be right back and talk a little bit more about how you can get involved. Okay, we are coming back. I love that song. Every time Matt Neely plays Happy, I get happy and start jumping around in my seat. We start dancing here
Monday
in the
tradition.
Studio. It is a Monday tradition. And, you know, Mondays are tough enough for everybody, so we might as well do something that gives us that little energy in addition to our caffeine. Thank you very much. I am Lydia Aranda, and I'm welcoming you back after our commercial break that we've just had. I'm your host for Rainmakers, because on Monday, we talk about all the great things that are helping make it rain, helping Southern Arizona thrive, and that includes people and projects and organizations, and definitely a Rainmaker guest that we have in our studio today is Melissa Dye, founder of Education Unidos. Melissa, it's been great to have you here this morning. I'm really enjoying learning, even myself, some little tidbits about this scholarship fund that you founded many years ago in 2013. And we were speaking a little bit about the break that not only has there been continual continual and sustainable funds mm-hmm. for the scholarship, but to date, you've awarded nearly $500,000 out to students in the Douglas area, the greater Cochise County area, for kids, or I should say for students. They're not kids. They're young adults or older adults that are going to school. They're going to community college. They're attending university. The need is always there. I don't think we will ever in our lifetime hear the phrase, okay, we've taken care of every student, no more scholarships needed, mm-hmm. because people need scholarships for lots of different reasons. Not only, it doesn't really have to do only with economic need, but sometimes extra expenses, or people are coming in from other areas, or they pursue some fields of study that are expensive, mm-hmm. things like architecture and other kinds of studies that require extra instruments, extra, just extra expenses.
Yeah, very much.
And if I understand correctly, Education Unidos Scholarship is open to any field of study. It's not restricted. Is that correct?
That is correct. For any student living in the Douglas area, is Education Unidos. But also what's really exciting is that the University South Foundation definitely has seen that need. So students living in Cochise County going to any university, any higher education institution.
Wonderful.
As long as they live in Cochise County,
okay,
they could apply for University South Foundation scholarships.
That's great.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
We were speaking before the break. You talked a little bit about what led to the need, the kind of impact that you were seeing real time come into play, because you were seeing that despite the processes and opportunities for resources that were there already, that applicant cohort after applicant cohort from that area. We're doing everything, checking all the boxes, doing everything right, but still not getting selected. So there was a need for additional scholarship opportunity. So this wasn't meant to replace, but really just to add more opportunity and get people into the system, so into the pipeline, so to speak. Tell me about when this started rolling, when it started having legs, the kind of then extracurricular activities that you were doing. What I recall, just to plant a little seed, get you started here, is that you would take extra time to hold cafecitos, to hold meetings over lunch, to hold meetings after work, and really get out into the community and say, hey, did you know you were talking to chambers, you were talking to business owners, you were speaking to other nonprofits, and you were just reminding them nicely, but continually, hey, there's a scholarship, please give, any amount helps. Is that the kind of approach you're still taking, kind of grassroots and being involved, or is there something more formal going on?
No, very much so, Lydia, that was great. Having those conversations, going out there, I would even come to Tucson and talk to folks here in Tucson about it. We have a lot of great folks from Douglas that live here in Tucson now. So, you know, just spreading the word, letting everybody know, the scholarship itself, yes, it's monetary funds for students, but also it gives everybody an opportunity to have a little piece of something that they can do to really make a difference. And a lot of times we think of scholarships as, oh, you know, they're going to get funds for that additional need that they have. But sometimes scholarships, if not the majority of the time, it makes a difference whether an individual can continue with school or not.
Right.
And so talking about planting the seed, you know, we were able to get those that seed money from IMEBECAS, as we spoke earlier, from the Mexican consulate. But really, it sort of became this really motto for us as we continue to plant the seed. What does it look like, not just for the next year, but also how does it look like for 5-10 years down the road? And when the mission that I had is I wanted to make sure that the alumni that were receiving these scholarship funds still felt connected to the scholarship and gave back, not just donations, but also their time and mentored other students that were coming up the pipeline.
That's such an important connection to, we often talk about, you know, time, talent, and treasure, right? And the treasure is kind of the obvious thing. You know, if you can give, we hope you'll give. And if you do give, we hope you'll give to XYZ Fund. But the time and the talent makes a difference as well, whether it means writing a congratulatory letter, showing up to one of the receptions or celebrations where the recipients are there and they can see others who have been on that path before them or help forge the path. And also to see that others have just persevered. Anytime, you know, if there's a challenge, it's always so encouraging, no matter what the challenge, to just know somebody else may have walked that path and it was difficult for them too. Because going to school is tough, you know, and being it for anybody. Studies take up time. If you're balancing family or you're in a new location or you no longer have a job or you need a job, you know, all those kinds of things that can impact the focus of study, or sometimes it's just overwhelming. You think that there's, how am I ever going to get through this? And then what am I going to do when I graduate? So all of those connections, it really is important to have opportunities where the students themselves can visualize.
Absolutely. The navigation is a big one too. How do we help these students navigate through the whole process of higher education, especially when they're first generation and, you know, they've never really seen it themselves, you know, with their parents or anybody else in their family. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of great opportunity out there to be able to support this scholarship, all scholarships, so that we can really, these are the folks, right, that we want to make sure that go to school, continue school, finish school. And we pride ourselves in that, in this scholarship, that every recipient that has received it has graduated. So we do hold that 100% graduation rate.
What a great success statement right there. 100% of every one of these scholars graduated.
Yes. Yes.
And some early, some maybe took the time to have a little few extra months or an extra term, but they did it.
They did it. And there's a lot of pride
in
it. Yes.
That's good.
Yes.
Wildcat pride and otherwise.
Yes, and otherwise for
sure. And I think that's a very important thing too. I know I've been involved with other organizations who raise scholarship funds and award scholarships, and some are very specific to one school or one field of study. And when when one has the opportunity to have a broader range mm-hmm. and still have that success, then even more folks getting excited about things, and they may change their field of study as they go along. You know, I know I changed my major a couple plus times because you start, that's part of the experience when you're in school, whether you're full-time or part-time. As you learn more things and you find other things that might capture your interest or really be a good match for your skill set.
Yeah.
So how nice that Education Needle Scholarship is flexible that way. Tell me a little bit about the other folks that are on this journey with you leading it, whether they are donors or maybe they serve on an advisory board or somehow help you complete this mission, because I know you and an absolute Wonder Woman and rock star that you are, but nobody can do this all alone. So tell me a little bit more about who's walking this journey with you.
Yeah, thank you. No, definitely did not do it alone. There was many people that believed in the scholarship from the get-go. Some people looked at me like, you're crazy, but you know, that I'm used to it.
You're like, that's okay.
That's whatever. But Angie Vega, who is now the director over at TRIO Student Support Services at Cochise College, she is a great friend and somebody who stood by me every step of the way. I have, of course, my great friend Sally Holcomb, also, you know, was
makes everything happen.
Makes everything happen.
She really does.
She really does. And University South Foundation, you know, everybody that was involved and continues to be involved with the University South Foundation, the presidents and vice presidents and treasurer secretaries, everybody there. We have two alumni that serve on the board now. That was my next goal. You know, how do we get the alumni to get more involved and really be part of a working board with the University of South Foundation? So Mary Anderson, who is one of the U of A alumni Education Needles recipient, an amazing individual, an amazing leader down in the Douglas area. She's involved with the board and has been involved for a couple of years now. And JP Villalobos, he's a shout out to JP. He has been working so hard, and he's a young man who's doing amazing in his career, but he's also a growing family. So he decided to this last year to say, okay, I need to like really look at my priorities, which is great. You know, that's what we want. And so he just recently stepped down, but he also served on the board. So it's, you know, it's so great to see alumni be involved like that.
Absolutely. And they can tell stories that others can't because they've been through the experience. And, you know, I'm going to pause for another break because we have a commercial break coming up right now. Perfect. But when we come back, we're going to finish up with some of the board and other ways that people can get involved. And we'll need to make sure to let people know where they can donate.
Perfect. Thanks.
So Matt Neely, take us away. Listening to the smooth voice of Yvonne Elliman, if I can't have you, the nice way, you know, over the weekend, some of my cousins and I were going way back in time and enjoying some of the Saturday Night Live hits, the Bee Gees, watching some clips of John Travolta back in the day. So that was perfect, Matt.
There you go.
Thank you for that
memory. Right on time.
Yeah,
good.
Right on time. We have been speaking this morning on Rainmakers for our first hour with a special guest and good friend and absolute rainmaker out in the community, Melissa Dye. Melissa, thank you so much for being with us this morning on Rainmakers.
That was wonderful.
I've been enjoying, I've known about Education Unidos. I've had the pleasure of being able to celebrate and help champion some of the excitement around this scholarship that you founded. And one of the things I want to make sure that people know is they can get involved and give too. But first, I want to give you a shout out. Recently, and just at the end of August, you had a special fundraiser, certainly not the only fundraiser, but you were doing a little campaign in honor of celebrating your own birthday, and you had a goal to raise $4,800 by a certain amount of time, and actually that particular campaign effort raised more. You got almost $6,000, about $5,700. So that was a great effort, and you handle and encourage those kind of special little campaigns here and there mm-hmm. all year long, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just a once-a-year opportunity.
Yeah,
so tell us how people can donate if they want to give.
So one of the fun ways to get involved is to become a friend of Education Unidos. And here we go. That's
showing off my very special cup that I've been awarded this morning. Thank you.
When you donate, you get that beautiful cup. You become a friend of Education Unidos. So that's a great way to do it. Going online into the University South Foundation website. If you do that, then it'll take you directly to all the wonderful causes that the University South Foundation supports, including Education Unidos. So if you do that, that's a great way to do it. Really easy way to get involved. In the past, we've done wine tastings and tequila tastings. And
they're fun.
They're a lot of fun. You mentioned
and the more you sip and taste, kind of the easier the giving gets.
That's the point. Yeah, the one with my birthday was an interesting one for sure. That was a really fun one to do. The University South Foundation came up with that idea. And we had such great showing and great support. And we did it in a matter of, I think, less than a month.
That's fantastic.
Were, you know, just giving. And yeah, let's help Melissa get to the, you know, goal. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. We have great supporters all throughout the state.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't just have to be from that area.
Right.
But again, reminding people. And there's a Facebook page. Education.
Yes.
Is it Education Unidos?
Yes.
On Facebook? Just
yes.
That simple.
Mm-hmm.
It is a public group. You can join the group or you can just read a little bit about mm-hmm. the history and donate there. But reminding folks that this was founded in 2013 and to date, almost $500,000 have gone out to scholars that are in the Douglas and Bisbee area or anywhere in Cochise County. So long as students live in Cochise County and are attending a community college or a university, they are eligible to apply. And do you take applications all throughout the year or just at a certain time of year?
It's at a certain time. The University South Foundation has the application a portal opening, I believe, at the beginning of January.
Okay. So they can apply for the spring and then they'll get their scholarship for the next
yes.
academic year.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful. We are actually getting ready to be close to wrapping up. So I want to remind people one more time, if you have any questions, please find Melissa Dye, founder of Education Unidos. You can become a friend of Education Unidos with your donations. You can learn more about how to let other people get involved, and I'm going to imagine that possibly there might even be an opportunity for folks to be scholarship readers, application readers to help out. And you can find all of that out on Facebook or by going to the University South University. Am I saying
South
that
Foundation.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
University South Foundation.
Yes.
To learn more about the details, Melissa. Thank you. Thank you, my friend, my colleague. I am so always impressed with the energy that you bring. And I know that you have a big day today. You are actually traveling up to the central part of the state to do other great community work and keep at it. But we appreciate all that you do and help you make it rain for Southern Arizona.
Thank you for the invitation. I do appreciate it.
Stay tuned. We are going to be coming up in our second hour. We will be hearing and seeing Issa Salavsky, who is the CEO of Make Way for Books, and organization that you know, and you know Isel also.
Yes.
We have wonderful things that we do in community together as Latina leaders. So please stay tuned right after this commercial break. Matt Neely's going to take us away with lovely, lovely sounds of the Charlie Brown Christmas. Vince Guaraldi Trio, one of my favorites. Good morning. We are back for our second hour segment of Rainmakers this Monday, December 8th. Matt Neely, that first hour just flew by and we were talking about great things, education.
It's like we're traveling in time.
We are traveling
in time. It's like we're time travelers, Lydia.
And we are right on time with that because today, if anyone who's just tuning in may not have heard, but December 8th apparently is National Pretend to be a Time Traveler Day. Who knew? I'm not even really sure what all that means, but we're doing our best here. We're going forward and back in time. It's also National Brownie Day.
I'm down with that. Yep.
And it is National Crossword Solvers Day. Okay. So shout out to all the crossword puzzle solvers, all those champions who do really well at that, or those who are just having a lot of fun guessing.
And Lydia, your brother spikes the football by filling them out in pen.
Yes, yeah, he sure does. Yeah. Shout out to Anthony in Chicago.
Good going.
And in fact, this cold Monday morning, he's really cold in Chicago. He's probably having a good time looking at the snow falling, having his morning cup of joe, and maybe, hopefully, listening to Rainmakers, you know.
Naturally.
So, yes, I'll have to give him a hard time if he's not. I am so excited again. On our first hour, we had Melissa Dye, and we were talking about Education Unidos and the scholarship that she founded back in 2013, and it's been going strong, helping students in the predominantly Douglas and Bisbee area, but really all over Cochise County. And Melissa, as I may have mentioned, besides doing that, she's just been a wonderful leader all around community, and she and I are great friends and colleagues, and now we are welcoming another good friend and colleague who is CEO of Make Way for Books, and that's Yisel Salavsky. Yisel, thank you. Bienvenido. So excited to have you here this morning.
Thank you for having me, Lydia. I know it took a minute for us to try and get this on the calendar
yes.
as often as this time of year in October or fall. We were talking about it, but I'm thrilled to be here sharing, you know, the importance of early literacy. So thank you for that opportunity.
Well, I am super thrilled, not only because we do have the opportunity to see each other in many different capacities, and we are part of a Latina leaders group that gets together with the Arizona Community Foundation here in Southern Arizona. Most of us live in the Pima County area, but the services we all provide often go far beyond those bounds, like your organization, Make Way for Books, really touches all around the state with literacy and connects with projects and people. And I have to tell you, I'm so thrilled about this. I am the daughter of teachers. Mm-hmm. And my mother in particular was very focused in her career on reading and bilingual education. That was really her passion.
So
my brother and I grew up, you know, I don't even remember learning to read. I just remember reading. I remember books always being a big part of my upbringing and continue to be a big part of my life, you know, today. But literacy is just so important, and there are many, many ways to tackle it. Your organization takes on that challenge in so many unique ways.
We do. And I'll just say, you know, a big part of Make Way for Books or the idea behind the services is what you're describing, right? A lot of us don't remember exactly, you know, the practice of learning how to read, and yet it's a foundational component to all of the learning that came later, mm-hmm. right? And so it is a very organic experience that starts from birth, and that's a big component of the programming, in the sense that when we talk about literacy, we're oftentimes, if we're not a pediatrician or we're not an educator that has been in that space, whether it's kindergarten or pre-K, literacy is not something that we talk about too often in terms of that birth to 5 and birth to 8 years old, because it really takes kids 8 years to learn how to read. So those foundational years in birth to 5, they're really, really critical. And that's the focus of Make Way for Books, right, is starting them off with that strong start so that by the time they get to school, they've had all those really important experiences in their early years. And in Arizona, I mean, nationally, this is an issue, but
sure.
In Arizona, you know, unfortunately, we do sit very comfortably right in those low numbers in terms of education attainment and high school graduation across the 50 states.
Right.
And yet that doesn't mean that we don't have really important programs that are working, but we have a long ways to go. And a big part of that is when you look at third grade reading scores, which people do talk about a little more frequently in the last few years in terms of markers, right? those students that are reading at grade level, that tends to track very similarly into high school in terms of who's graduating. And so if we've got in Arizona and in Pima County, more than 60% of our kids not reading at grade level, and that's regardless of what zip code you're in, right? But then you add the layer of under-resourced communities, and that's, you know, closer to 70% of kids not reading at grade level.
Wow. That's a number to really let sink in and to say we all can be paying attention to this, yes. And we all can help make a difference by many different things, which is what I'm so excited to continue to speak about. But before we quite get to that, I do want to mention last evening I was speaking with one of my cousins, and she's a retired educator out of the Tucson Unified School District. And she was asking me, oh, who's going to be on your show tomorrow? And I was sharing with her. She was so excited. She is very familiar with Make Way for Books, not only in her teaching capacity herself, but literacy is a very big thing that she very much focused on her own children, and now they are grown up and have their own families, and she is always taking, even as one of them is a toddler, another is going to turn a year old this weekend. Aww. So she started very early with them in her capacity to anytime she takes care of them or finds activities, she takes it upon herself to take even the little ones very young into some of these activities, taking them to get familiar in their learning via books and or books together with activities. And she just went on and on about how much she turned to Make Way for Books as a resource for the parents of her students and for her colleagues and all that. So you have champions of this organization all over the place.
We're lucky, you know, to have been around. So we started in Pima County. You know, our founders are still, you know, we still have our founders here locally, which is lovely. Mary Jam Bancroft. And when she came, or when she started Make Way for Books, hence the name, it really was getting books out in the community. She essentially, you know, moved here with her husband when he was starting his law firm 27 years ago now, and volunteered to do some reading at under-resourced libraries, and very quickly recognized that there were not a lot of quality books, especially in that younger birth to five, when you're really getting them started and sort of those pre-K stories. And she has an early childhood background and definitely thought, you know, we got to do better, right? So it was really getting books and workshops out into the communities through the libraries. But, you know, fast forward to now, and for the last 26 years, Make Way for Books has really been focused on honing in on what are those activities and programs and the science behind supporting families and educators. So I'll talk a little bit about the programming in terms of how we've had an opportunity to connect to educators and families. But really, we have two core programs. It's the Story School program, which is family education. Mm-hmm. And then we also have coaching and professional development for educators. So
both of which are equally important, different, but important. And they make that whole system whole.
Exactly. So it's kind of like wraparound services, right? In the sense that what we like to do is focus in on, you know, specific zip codes. We refer to it as neighborhood school readiness. And essentially, wherever that baby is spending time, that's where we want to be, right? So with their caretakers, and that could be in a childcare setting, right? At home, or it could be in a preschool. Mm-hmm. Now, in Arizona, we actually don't have a lot of preschools, and we're talking about, like, you know, quality certified preschools, not because child care centers aren't doing an amazing job taking care of children, especially those that are close in our neighborhoods, right, where it's family and friends that you know. However, you don't have that education background to really understand what's happening developmentally and how important it is to engage in these frequent, you know, letter recognition and sound recognition and back and forth conversation. So it's not that the science behind it is hard, it's that we haven't necessarily done a great job outside of the school system to get that information out, both to parents and to educators. And to your point about it sort of coming naturally, right, that your parents had books in the home. Mm-hmm. Books in the home are correlated to adult education as well. So this is why it's really impactful, right? I'm a first generation college graduate. And I'll tell you, I don't have, you know, we all talk about one of the fun things sort of with, you know, work activities is when we have somebody new at one of our LSAF, we kind of talk about, right? Like, what is your first memory of reading or what's your favorite book? And it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, we do what our parents did for us and it sort of comes organically. But if you didn't do that before, that tends to follow. And if you don't have access to preschool, because like I said, there's not a lot of them, we're considered a preschool desert across Arizona. And that just means even if it was all free, we wouldn't have, if everyone sent their child to preschool, there wouldn't be enough spaces.
Right.
So it's sort of a
multi-pronged. There aren't enough of them set up to accommodate the need.
Sure. And especially for working parents, mm-hmm. right? So parents want to do right by their kiddos. But they're working. And oftentimes, you know, you might go to your pediatrician appointment and you get a free book, which is wonderful, right? There's a lot of book giveaway programs.
Yes.
But your session, I remember as a parent when my kids were babies, right? You go and they need their shots or all these different things.
There are a lot of things to be taken care of, yeah. right, at that moment, that sometimes the book part goes by the wayside.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and also, you know, oftentimes, if you don't have those memories, if that wasn't a behavior that you normally engage with, and you're not necessarily thinking about talking to your baby that's in a car seat or reading to them, right? Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, they're fun and they're engaging, but, you know, they're not communicating, and yet they're doing a lot of communicating, right? And
there's a lot of absorbing going on.
Oh, my
on.
Gosh, brain development, right, during that time frame. And so that's the wonderful thing about the Story School program is it really is empowering parents with the information that they need and the resources because they are their child's first and most important teacher. And regardless of their education level, they have everything that they need to set their child up with that strong start.
Well, that is so much, so important, so great, and so encouraging that parents know that they can have lots of different resources and not have to tackle this alone. Believe it or not, we are at our first commercial break, so we're going to take a little pause right now. You've been listening to Rainmakers, which is the Monday segment of The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and in studio this morning, we have Yisel Salavsky, who is CEO of Make Way for Books. So please stay tuned because we have a lot more to talk about, how to get involved, and also some other fun stories about books and reading that we want to share. So stick around. We'll be back right after this break. It's always fun to have those new tunes and those great old classic tunes, especially when they're jazzy renditions like Ray Charles singing about Rudolph. We are here on a Monday morning. It's December 8th, and we've been speaking this morning with two fabulous leaders who are very much focused on education and the programs that help enhance. Our first hour, we had Melissa Dye talking about Education Unidos, which is a scholarship fund that she founded back in 2013. And now we have Yisel Salavsky, who is CEO of Make Way for Books. And Make Way for Books is a fabulous organization that focuses on literacy, especially early childhood literacy, not only for the children themselves, but it is a great resource for parents and for educators. Yisel, thank you for being here this morning. It's been a cold morning outside, but we're nice and toasty here.
Yeah, it's cozy in here. And actually, you know, we can't complain because most of the year, right?
Right.
We get warm sunshine, so we'll take it. It puts us in the right mindset for the holiday season. But thank you so much for having me. I know we've talked about this for some time, and so I'm thrilled to be here, and especially following another colleague, right? As you mentioned before, I think that we are lucky in Pima County to have so many groups that we can be a part of collectively, because we do really have a lot of conversations about how to do a lot with more, which is mm-hmm. often what nonprofits have to do. But I think it's important for the community to also know that there's a big concerted effort for all of these leadership groups and the organizations, right, to not duplicate efforts, right, really complement one another, try and make it easy for families and the entire community to access our resources. So I'm thrilled to be in this space with you, as we're often in community in other spaces.
That's wonderful. And one of the things that I was really listening to you say in the last segment was that, and you just hit on it again, that this is not to do the same as what other literacy organizations or other educational organizations or even what the school districts are doing. Make Way for Books has a particular niche to focus on. Originally, the very basic but powerful mission of getting books into the hands of kids, parents, and schools, and other parts of the community, like you said, other nonprofit organizations, maybe doctor's offices or other places.
Exactly. And I think it's, you know, the books piece was how it started. And then ultimately, you know, as you're developing programming that's really going to make a difference, the resources or the research is readily accessible. And so all of our, the majority of our employees, they're literacy specialists. And so this is their focus, right? And the science behind how kiddos learn how to read, and more importantly, what are those behaviors that we need to engage in frequently with them during these critical developmental stages. And I think to your point about it being this niche piece, what has made Make Way for Books successful is really that parents and educators keep coming back, right? These programs are working. Mm-hmm. And part of it is empowering folks, right? Parents want to do right by their kids, caregivers want to do right by their kids. And for educators, it's much more helpful, right, as a kindergarten teacher, if your kiddos come in, you mentioned that your mom was a teacher, mm-hmm. Or you had educators in the family, and they can tell the difference right away for kiddos who are coming in and have not handled books, have not done a lot of back and forth conversation, have not had these sort of pre-foundational skills, and it's hard to catch them up, right? So exactly that, I think we're coming in from a space knowing that what are the behaviors that you're already engaging with, and then these are some extra tools to help you, right? And so, and families see the difference and they're very receptive to it. So
sure.
We started here in Pima County, but yes, in terms of partnering, back in 2019, we had the opportunity through collaborations with the State Literacy Initiative with Read On Arizona and the Arizona Department of Ed to expand out into Maricopa. So we actually have two satellite sites out in Maricopa as well.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So our headquarters is here. We've expanded a lot over the years when we moved into our headquarters on Stone, which folks should come visit us if they haven't been there and take a tour. But when we started there, we had about, you know, 12 staff and hundreds of volunteers. And fast forward now, you know, we've got just under 40 staff.
Wow.
Right here and our staff out in Maricopa. The majority of the programming, right, is in Pima County, but we have definitely... we're in 7 different counties this year. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And especially in a lot of indigenous and hard to reach communities. So essentially that's really a lot of the coaching and professional development, because there is not a lot available in the early literacy space for coaching and development, professional coaching and development for those caregivers and educators, especially in this space, which everybody knows, you know, Arizona's paying attention to it in terms of trying to move those numbers in the right direction, right?
That's wonderful. And that growth is very, it's been, and I'm not going to say rapid growth, but steady.
Yes.
And sort of by leaps and bounds, not
exactly.
Just little trickles, which is really amazing. I want to let our listeners and our viewers know, in 2022, Make Way for Books received the Library of Congress American Prize, which is awarded for significant and measurable contribution to increasing literacy levels in the U.S. So the impact is clearly there. You're moving the needle for
yes,
sure.
Yes.
And I'm sure some of that growth that you talked about has a little bit to do with being recognized, or maybe being recognized leads to that. It's kind of a
chicken
and
egg. Share a little bit about how
Thank you
for mentioning it. You know, I love to say Make Way for Books is a Pima County homegrown organization, mm-hmm. with a statewide reach and national recognition. And we're really thrilled about that, because, again, it reminds people that we have something here, a program here that's really working, mm-hmm. That can be replicated, right? And so the Library of Congress Award really, based on the time frame, it had everything to do with during COVID. We all remember that time frame.
Yes.
Really challenging for schools. And a lot of our nonprofit partners and community organizations, everything came to a halt, right? We were all trying to figure out how to continue supporting the community at a really strange time. And Make Way for Books, I mentioned the two core programs, but we've also for many years had a Make Way for for Books app. So obviously we want the programming and book handling and reading to be in person, but we also know that we are using our phones, right, as a resource.
Phones, tablets, exactly. Laptops, computers, exactly. All kinds of things.
So the app provides free books and resources digitally. Now, it is intended for a parent to go through, right? It's educational information. It has little messages around, you know, screen time and things that you would want to tell parents. And the child has to actively kind of stop and engage in the same way that we might do in our programming. And the thinking there was just reach, you know, how do we continue doing a lot with less? And having that component, because we had already done work digitally, you know, the team really came together and essentially created a lot of hybrid content, which, you know, won us the opportunity, right, recognition for that Library of Congress award, because we actually expanded services during COVID, which was very different than what we were seeing. So we were still, you know, literacy specialists. We're delivering all the content to families and leaving it outside, right, for folks who were doing the Story School program. And then they were doing hybrid, right, Zoom programming, and then same for the educators. And that content now allows us to do what we do in person. So we serve over 500 families with our Story School program here, just here in Pima County, and then another just under 600 in Maricopa. And then, sorry.
We're gonna talk more about that. As soon as we come back, we have a commercial break that we're going to right now. But let's stay tuned. You're listening to Rainmakers. And we're back after that commercial break at the bottom of the hour. We are listening to Cut the Cake, Little Average White Band. And Cut the Cake being very appropriate because we learned earlier that today, December 8th, is National Brownie Day. So brownie is a type of cake, one of my most favorite types. And thinking that that adds a little bit. We've been speaking about education and literacy this morning with our two different guests. And right now we are with the CEO of Make Way for Books, Yisel. Thank you for being here this morning with us. It's such a pleasure to have you here. And we were speaking about many different things right before the hour of the niche but important service that Make Way for Books hones in on, and the age group, the fact that this is an organization that provides tools as well as books, so lots of resources. And before we went on break, you were speaking about the development of an app that became quite strong and even more pronounced during pandemic years and enabled Make Way for Books to keep in touch with parents, with teachers, and with other community organizations to keep that literacy going and the importance of that. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, and in particular, something that I'd like your opinion on by way of technology. A couple different things. I'm wondering, in your opinion, how do ebooks change either the formula or the pattern of learning between intergenerational literacy learning? Because that could be parents to kids, or maybe even other members of the family that get involved with the development of literacy.
Sure. No, I appreciate the question, and I think you're spot on that it is, you know, there's lots of people that can be involved in the supporting the literacy of their child, right? And the app, in terms of ebooks and the difference really between being able to handle an actual book, thank you, and I know I'm not talking in the right spot here, is really the way that the app is set up. I would say ebooks are better than no book, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Depending on the age, one thing that you do miss out on is book handling skills, which are important for children. However, the knowledge gained in terms of the literacy components, the development with the language and letter recognition can really be replicated digitally. Okay. I think that the difference, or where the app is really helpful and has actually won awards in and of itself based on the educational component, is that it really does purposely sort of pause. It it uses technology to essentially be the parent in that scenario, right, where you would be repeating a story, or you would be repeating certain words, or you'd be emphasizing particular sounds, right, because these are all important building blocks of learning how to read. And so in our app in particular, if it's an ebook that you just sort of, you know, you access it, if it's not specifically right for early literacy, then it's not going to engage in that way. So I think that is one of the other components around the app, is it really is beyond, similar to what I've said about Make Way for Books. The book is a really important component. And I will say we emphasize ensuring that we have authors and stories and publisher and illustrators that represent the community we're serving. So it is important for children to see themselves in stories, right? Sure. And so that we go even deeper in that sense too, around book selection. And so that's been another reason why I think when we have had over the years the opportunities to work with really every school district, that's what they love, and that's why they want Make Way for Books to come back, right? Is because they really... are able to get stories that they wouldn't necessarily write. These are hand selected in terms of thinking about what our community demographics are, right? And especially finding books in home language. So, you know, certainly all the books are in English, but we always find out about home language. We have bilingual programming, so English and Spanish, but we've got books in, you know, over 35 different languages.
And that's so important for a community like Pima County that is so multinational. We have a lot of different languages.
We do.
Of folks that live here in Pima County, well, really across our state, but particularly in Pima County. I know that being able to provide in European languages and Middle Eastern languages, in Latin, you know, the indigenous.
Yes, and we do all languages. That we have. Exactly. I appreciate you mentioning, you know, indigenous communities, because it really is a an oral like tradition, right? So finding books is not easy, and yet it's very doable, and we do it every time we're in those communities. And it makes a difference, because children and educators recognize the value of that. They're seen, and it's a book that they can engage with their grandparents with, and their you know, aunts and uncles. And so the repetition piece is key. So, you know, the home language component becomes all the more important, because it ensures that we're telling parents, you know, read to them and speak to them in whatever your home language is, right? And then it's just going to be complementary. It's not impacting, you know, certainly I would say that research has changed a lot, but historically there was some concern or the idea that, you know, two languages would be confusing, and that's not the case at all. It's
no,
the opposite.
It's probably even more enlightening. And I really like your attention to the difference, some people say, you know, everything's got to be digital now. And I love that you say, yes, you know, there can be that digital component, but there is that difference. I speak from some of my siblings and cousins and, you know, other folks in that I'm related to and interact with. Some of them really as adults only want to read on a Kindle or their tablet or whatever, and that's fine. And others are absolutely, they'll use their iPhone for everything under the sun except for reading, because they love to touch the newspaper. They love to hold a book in their hand. But I like that you really hone on from a literacy learning perspective. At
100%.
Those early ages, there's a lot about book handling.
Book handling, yeah.
That stimulates learning.
There is. There's a lot of stimulation that happens in that time frame.
Wow.
And actually, you know, teachers even recognized during COVID, right? It was challenging for them when the kids came back with penmanship, right? Or even holding a pencil and things like that. So there is learning that happens based on some of that in-person engagement, but technology, tactile, but technology is going to be here, right? And I'm really proud of Make Way for Books in the sense that, again, this was another great example of saying, how can we continue being creative about expanding reach and leaning into technology at a time, thinking about, right, how that was going to be supplemental to the learning, especially at a time where that was pre-COVID. So really during COVID, everyone was figuring out, right, how to do things digitally, including in education.
Sure.
And we were already a little bit ahead of the game in there, which is wonderful. And so really have
a nice advantage that you had.
It is. And I think, you know, we've continued to lean into that, right? And like I said, now it was just the book and, you know, small videos on sort of how you should engage with a parent. But like I said, the book does have some really critical moments in the stories where it's engaging a child in the same way that we might do in our programming. And so the programming really is, there are 6 weeks and parents participate with their child. It's free. So if you have folks that are interested in accessing the programming, they can go to the website, they can call us.
And the website is makewayforbooks.org, right? Straightforward.
Yes,
no exactly. Abbreviations.
No,
just
it's
makewayforbooks.org.
Exactly. And the app can be downloaded right now. You have an iPhone or you just look up the Make Way for Books app and you'll find it and you can download it. And there's also information for programming there. And we have multiple starts throughout the year for the program to make it available for parents, mm-hmm. you know, as frequently as we can. So we kind of follow the school year. So it's, two in fall and two in spring in terms of starts and stops. So really any time, even if there's not one accessible, then at that time frame, we'll get them registered for the next upcoming opportunity.
You know, I'm really glad to hear that because so many programs sort of start at the beginning of the academic year. And then, and if you don't know, if
yes.
you're new to the area or new to literacy, or you just somehow weren't made aware, then you can find out in those first few weeks, your child might come home from school with learning about it, or there might
exactly.
be a newsletter or whatever it may be. And so it's not too late. You can still sign up and get
anytime.
Something in that same semester or that same
exactly.
long-term fall
exactly.
term.
And we offer it at different times, mornings, midday, you know,
oh,
right? Because when
nice.
You have little ones, yeah. So we also really just based on where folks are located, we offer it all over town in lots of different zip codes at libraries, in school districts, in other, you know, we partner with other nonprofits. So very easy to find an upcoming session of Story School. And the only requirement is having a child that's between, you know, baby birth all the way up until right before they start school. So birth to 5.
Nice. That's a really great, that's some flexibility too. So sometimes parents that are getting used to parenting, you
yes.
know, maybe they can get their feet wet a little bit, get their sea legs, as they
yeah.
say, and then start exploring. In the example I gave with one of my cousins who's a retired teacher, she really mentioned that she kind of took it upon herself when she was helping with her nieces and nephews and mm-hmm. her own kids and all that kind of thing. So it really comes with that people in your own family who may be aware
oh
of these
gosh,
kinds
yeah.
of things can help others find the way. I wanted to ask a question. I know we're getting a little bit close to a break, so I might just talk about it for a minute and then
yeah.
officially ask the question later. Maybe just
sure.
plant a seed. But you were speaking about part of the professional development is for early childhood educators themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke about the fact that in our community, there are a lot of there may be not as many formal preschools.
That's right.
I'm going to use air quotes a little bit there. Formal preschools as institutions or as businesses, but we do know that we have an awful lot of early childhood educator caregivers.
Exactly. Child care centers.
And child mm-hmm. care centers and folks who may have an established business, but they do
yep.
it in their homes,
home care
so it may
providers.
Not always be recognized with the same kind of opportunities
exactly.
that might be in a brick and mortar, another brick and mortar. So programs like these together and the organization Make Way for Books, together with other organizations like Children's Action Alliance, First Things First,
exactly.
I can think of a number of them.
All
of
our partners, yeah.
Is there attention to maybe how to bridge that gap, like maybe some of those type of early childhood educator caregivers and care facilities might come together themselves as sort of a unit and maybe share resources among themselves
sure.
or something like
oh
that, go
God.
Through
well,
a train the trainer or something.
I'm glad you brought it up. So exactly, that our educators, our literacy specialists on the coaching side that work with the educators, they are all trained in a train the trainer model. So we are actually looking at right now developing a version where it's a certification, right, that the educator would receive. Because it also helps them if they decide that they really do want to, right, continue their education or move
their
into
own
a
development.
Formal, exactly, which is wonderful. So different, right, going that other layer and thinking about how we create more of a support force, right, where they might then later become a trainer themselves.
I'm going to stop us right there because we have a commercial break, but that'll be a good place to come back. You've been listening to Rainmakers, and we're talking about literacy, makewayforbooks.org in the house today. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this commercial break. And we're back for our last little segment of what has been a very informative and really upbeat Monday, December 8th, on Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and we are wrapping up our second hour segment where we are speaking about books and literacy, and especially the early childhood development years with literacy. We've been speaking with CEO Yisel Salovsky, and I'm so excited that you've been coming in today, and it's just flown by so quickly.
It has.
So many good things that Makeway for Books, which I will remind folks, is headquartered here in Pima County. It's headquartered here in Southern Arizona, but now serves seven counties of our state, including up in Maricopa.
That's right.
And that is really, I think, I just always love to celebrate when we've got an HQ down here that has so much reach.
We do a lot of reach at a really important time.
Yes, and for a really important mission. And to remind our viewers and our listeners, Make Way for Books is an early literacy nonprofit providing proven programs, and I think that is a big part of it. Not just proven, but award recognition. You are in the Library of Congress for the impact that you've made on literacy.
That's
and that's not an easy feat, especially at those young ages. So it's measurable. It's
measurable,
repeatable.
And, you know, and we hold ourselves to those standards, because the reality is, if families and educators are spending time with us, mm-hmm. we want to make sure, right, that we're making an impact and they're getting what they need to go back and repeat and engage those behaviors and really just understand. That's the thing, is giving folks the information when they realize how critical, and especially in that time frame, like I said, it's normal, you know, in the K through 12 space, educators know what work they're there to do, right?
Yes.
While I will say, I think they're still undervalued in terms of
Absolutely.
Other resources, right?
You will not get an argument from me with that. It is so true.
Resources are scarce there, so you can just imagine in this space that we're not talking about and thinking about too much, that birth to five space, mm-hmm. the resources are even more limited. And it's just because, again, we're thinking of education from this mindset of when they start, and realistically, these foundational years are critical to ensuring that they are actually going to make it into the workforce, right? Be independent, strong learners, and we're not getting enough of our community kiddos there.
Well, and what I like about this too, as we wrap up, is really to say that the focus that you have in all of this is really two-generational learning. It's two-generation method of change.
That's
so that
right.
means the parent and the child, or the caregiver and the child. And so then that allows also teachers and parents to find a way to collaborate, and other organizations out in the community.
It does, and they become strong advocates for their child's education, and that maintains, right? And you see that education is that critical component that has proven over and over again to really be able to change the trajectory and level the playing field for folks, right? And so that multi-generational approach is really important.
Wonderful. If you want to find out more, not only to learn about the programs themselves, but to find out how to participate, and of course, it's a nonprofit, so if you want to donate,
please. End of year. It's end of year giving, and even though, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about it today, we've certainly been impacted by these, you know,
we
federal
sure have.
Cuts, as our entire state has.
And so go to makewayforbooks.org,
right. please give
and learn more. Thank you so much for being on this morning.
Thank you for having
me. Wishing everybody a wonderful week, and we'll have much more to share. Make
Thank
it a
you,
great
Lydia.
Day. Thank you, Yisel.